Welcome to Journeys of Romance. I'm your host, Jess Michaels. Recently in Romancelandia, the question has been coming up why movie rom-coms are not cashing in on being sexy. And I don't know the answer to this because I think it's dumb that they're not. But our guest today writes books that would fit that bill. So Hollywood, please call her because she writes what she calls body rom-coms, which makes me super excited. So please welcome Olivia Dade.
Hello. Thank you so much for asking me to chat.
And thank you so much for coming. And we had a lot of fun figuring out how we were going to do this, but we worked it out. So I feel like I start like 90% of these going, I'm so sorry about our technical difficulties, but I appreciate you being here.
We found a way. It was
inspiring. Really, it was. We fought against the odds for this. So we earned it.
We went through our bleak moment. We have emerged into our AGA.
We really earned this happily ever after between the two of us. I feel like I'm a better writer having done this with you. I really understand like the dark moment so much differently now. So were you always a reader?
I was always an enormous reader. From the time I can remember, my instinct was always to have my head in a book in preference to reality.
So, yes, I hear that.
I was the sort of kid where, I would go, when I was a kid, I would accompany my mom to, say, a doctor's appointment. And when the doctor would call her, she would say something to me and I wouldn't notice. So I would just look up at some point and she would just not be there.
No.
And I'd be like, oh, okay. And then I would keep reading until she came back. So
this is fine. I have my book friends. I'll live.
Yes, exactly.
I was always the same way. Like I could get lost in a book like forever and still do. Like sometimes I'm at doctor's appointments for myself and they call my name and I'm like, oh man. Yes. I don't want to do that. I'm in the middle of this. So when did that transition into writing? Were you always kind of writing as a kid too, or?
My original background is in academia. I was in a American history PhD program at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. And so my writing was almost entirely, it was academic writing. Mm-hmm. And then I fled academia for finishing my PhD. And I just assumed that I could not write fiction, even though I read fiction, specifically, for the most part, romance, for most of my life. And it wasn't until 2014 that, for whatever reason, some weird synapse in my brain fired. And I sort of sat down and wrote a scene, which didn't go anywhere, but it was such a... At the time, in 2014, I was depressed. Mm-hmm. And I found that the writing was, it cleared my head of all the junk that was in it. Because as I was immersed in whatever I was writing, the rest of it went away. And it was mm-hmm. such a relief to me. And it also just was a pleasure to write again, because I'd always loved writing of any sort. And it was fun. And then I started, writing more. I wrote a full length 90,000 word book, which will never see the light of day.
Those under the bed books.
I think that there were some really funny parts to it, but it was lacking what is conventionally termed a plot, which I discovered that purists prefer.
Those assholes.
I know.
A plot.
I know. What is technically called a plot. I've said this before, but I actually think it's hilarious, right? So at some point during this 90,000 word book, I'm like, maybe something should happen other than sex and bantering. Although that seemed implausible, but I was like, okay. So I thought back to the first chapter where it was a tour guide at Colonial Williamsburg, because I did that for a long time. Mm-hmm. And she'd had a jerk in her audience who actually, that was based on specific experience that I had had. And I'm like, what if he shows back up and pushes her down some stairs?
Oh my gosh. You went way to the opposite end of the plot. You're like, and then she's almost murdered.
Exactly.
Wow. I was, you went like, there.
I dusted off my hands. I'm like, plot accomplished, bitch.
I did it. Oh my god.
It's so bad, Jess.
Wow. So at some point, though, you must have started learning about plot and going, how do I not go to the furthest extreme? Yeah. And turn what it I into a very different kind of book.
Right. What I discovered is I needed at least some sort of basic, what I call a story arc.
Yeah.
It's not really an outline, but it's something, it's a version of something like that.
Yeah.
So I could make sure that, like, things happened.
Right. Sure.
And that I was tracing certain threads through the story, and I knew, sort of had a sense of, like, you know, what the point was of each chapter and so forth. So that is what I discovered. So my next book I wrote was a novella based on a submission call from an EPUB. And basically my goal for that was to have a plot.
Sure.
And so I wrote that, and that actually got, God help me, that got offers. Mm-hmm. And it, in retrospect, it probably should not have, because it's not by far my strongest work. I was just still a baby author. But that was my first book I got published, which is Broken Resolutions. And I got that published at the end of 2015. So, yeah. So it was my second book story that I had written. And boy, it shows.
But obviously they saw a thing there, you know, because they wanted to publish it. So, I mean, as much as, like, we look back sometimes at, like, our earlier work and just say, oh my God, what was happening? I pushed her down some stairs. I mean, like, at the same time, like, voice is so often, I think, what they buy, and character, and, you know, and all of the things that you are strong at, that you're probably still strong at, are the things that, like, attract people sometimes to the books. I was just saying this to somebody the other day. Like, I feel like, if I write really strong characters, sometimes I can be, like, loosey-goosey with a plot. Like people will overlook something that they're like, are you kidding me? Versus if I don't have that really strong connection to the characters, then I feel like they're a lot less likely to be like, I'll accept that. I'll allow that. Because I want to know what happens. They're going to bang again. That's what I want.
I mean, I think in some ways, part of my sort of the arc to this point of my publishing career has been going from transitioning not fully away from the reason I think I was first acquired, which was, I think, almost 100% humor, right? Mm-hmm. I think that was what sold that story, was that I think it was quite funny in parts, but it wasn't great on emotions, it wasn't great on pacing, and other things like that. Sort of the arc that I've tried to sort of bend my writing is to be, try to keep that, but try to insert emotion and a better ability to, like, describe things. And so to try to add other stuff to that, but not fully lose the humor. Or occasionally, if a story doesn't call for it, I do have a couple stories that don't really have a lot of humor to them, and that's deliberate. But I mean, that's, you know, that is the goal, is to make sure that I'm not a one trick author pony.
Yeah.
And I think that's what, when I have not read that first book for a long time, but I think I would say that that is one of its weaknesses, is that I think you're right. I think it's voicey, for lack of a better term.
Yeah.
As far as humor, but a lot of the other things that I push myself to learn how to do just are not there yet, you know?
Yeah. You have, because everybody has their base things that they're good at. I think, you know, I mean, when I look at other authors that I've read for a long time, authors that I've known for a long time, and people that I've talked to on this podcast, like, that's the thing, you know, I mean, like, we all have a thing that we're just innately good at, you know what I mean? And for you, maybe it's humor, or, you know, I mean, for me, maybe it was, I don't know what it is for me, something with character, probably, just thinking about myself. For some people, it's like having that really intricate plot, you know. For some people, it's like oh my God, I'm just gonna cry no matter what, even though I feel like this is a ridiculous plot, I'm just gonna sob. And then it's taking that kernel, that base that is your strength, and then hopefully sort of, like, starting to add more and more layers around it, but that little core is kind of the thing that you always kind of revert to of like, that's my sweet spot is like, that's the thing that I always come back to.
Right. Right. So you think yours is, you think character?
Something with character probably. Yeah. And maybe just like banging.
No, so, that's true. Sex scenes always came quite easily to me as well.
Yeah. Either. And I feel like that's, isn't that true? Like when you talk to other people, like there's people that are like, oh my God, it's a sex scene. It's going to be 4 days of me just slogging through this. And then there are those of us that are like sex scene, free words. Woo! Like there's those, like two camps.
I wrote a book that because of consent issues, they could not bang until like the very end of the book. And also it was, I did it in part to push myself on my descriptions. It was a futuristic gothic. Yeah. You know, a gothic is all about, part of it is atmosphere. And you sort of set that atmosphere through descriptions. And there's good chunks of the book where she's exploring this, you know, mansion, for lack of a better word, and you know, solving the mysteries and figuring out what's happening. And
that's she running through a hallway with a nightgown because she has to, right?
No, she's too badass for that. Aww. But she is exploring things, and but she's alone a lot. She's describing things, so there's no banter, there's no sex until the very end. And I was like, I had no idea how much of my word count was boning.
Wait until you can't do it. You're like, oh my God, I'm lost.
I was like, they have to do something else. And it's not, do you mind if I swear?
Yeah, no, go. Do it. Have it up.
Okay. I was like, they have to do something else and it can't be fucking.
Yeah. Yeah. When I have a book, because you're right. I mean, like, no matter that I think is something that we probably share as a core. Like I write very sexy books, but every once in a while, I mean, I also have to write a book that's right for the character, like you said. And there are times when I'm writing, like I write Regency historical. So, you know, virginal miss is not going to probably be getting it down in every book, like on page 13, like it's not, I have to find a reason for that to work. And sometimes I don't have it, you know, sometimes I need it, like it just doesn't, that doesn't fit. And I will find, like, if I'm on a page 150, I'm like, oh my God, we're having this book and all they've done is kiss a little. And what is happening right now? Is this slow burn? Is this what slow burn is? Like, I don't, like it makes my head hurt. But it also is like, that's what's right for the characters. You have to balance that. Because don't you feel like that, like that's a conversation also a brand. Because, you know, I mean, it's like, if that's part of your brand and then you're not doing it at the time that people, like literally doing it at the time that people are expecting, like there's always that. I also always feel kind of uneasy that like, this isn't what my readership is expecting.
I'm hoping that in recent years I've buried it enough that like some of my books are much, you know, I think when you get to the actual scene is going to be quite graphic and hopefully sexy, but I think I've buried it enough that sometimes they have sex early on and sometimes they do not, that I'm not hopefully, I have not backed myself in a corner. I hope not, because the book, I literally just finished a draft last night. And first of all, this draft is absurdly, ridiculously, horrendously, disastrously long. And the book is called Slow Burn, which should tell you what this means.
Yes.
I literally was at the length of one of my average full-length novels before they even kissed. I was like, I cannot believe this. And I told my husband reads all my books. And when I told him that, he was very disapproving.
He's just like, what?
he was bitter because my spoiler alert is about at 50% or so. And he's like, I have been reading and reading.
He was already mad. And now he's like, this is bullshit. I'm not a reader anymore. I quit. I'm no longer a fan.
He's going to send me a letter of complaint.
Maybe you could post a review on Goodreads. That would be great. Oh my gosh.
Like, what is this bullshit? Like,
it's a lie. Life is a lie. But I think you're right. I think it is like, because so much of what brand really is like, what is reader expectation? So when you do vary it, they tend to go along. And when you get to that point of actual like sex, then they're like, all right, here we go. And they're like looking forward to it too. So maybe that's really what it is that it's like making sure that you meet the expectation wherever that expectation falls in.
Right.
Is like making, but then making sure that when you do get to the point, you know what I mean? Cause if I then close the door, they would show up at my house. It would beat me.
I understand. I did actually write a story. Sweetest in the Gale, the one of the three novellas in Sweetest in the Gale, is actually, I mean, it has a sexy scene, but there's nothing more than kissing. That's the only time I've written a story where there was no orgasms to be had, but it fit the story. And I mean, at a certain point, you just gotta.
I have to do what's right for the book, or else the book doesn't make sense. Like that is right. Like because then you're writing against. And I feel like the readers feel that, like when you write something and you're not writing authentically, whatever, you know what I mean? Then they feel that. Cause you certainly feel it when you have someone that like bungles their way into romance to get the money and they write something that's shit. And you can feel it. Like we call them out on that. And so, you know, I feel like that is true of me too. And I'm trying to, because that's often where I get stuck. I don't know how you are. Cause I'm also, I plot, I have kind of a hybrid of plotting and pantsing.
Right.
Sometimes there's times when I get to a certain point and I'm stuck and it's just like, it's miserable. And I'm almost 100% of the time I have done something that doesn't work in the book because I wanted it to work in my head, mm-hmm. but it doesn't actually work for the book. And then it's like backing it out and like finding where it actually needs to go or where, if it doesn't work.
No, that's totally, if I'm not just personally, unless there's something weird going on in my personal life, sure. If I get stuck like that, it is because I've screwed up somewhere.
Yeah.
And it may be that I have followed what's in my sort of story arc that I've laid out, but then I'm realizing, no, that doesn't, or I've veered from the story arc in a way that I thought when I was writing, oh, that's cool. I think this works. Mm-hmm. And then I'm like, no.
Yep.
That was out of character it doesn't, it's too complicated or whatever.
Sometimes I find too, something is out of time. Like it's not where it's supposed to be. Like that just happened in my book that's coming out in October that I just finished. I don't know. Time has no meaning anymore. But like I was writing and I got up to this point and I was just stuck. And I realized, oh no, this needs to, like, this can't happen now. This is way too early for that. This has got to go at the end. And then everything was fine. Everything was freaking roses again. Cause I was like,
right.
Okay. But again, I mean, don't you think that there's some level of like experience in writing? The longer that you write, the longer that you know your process, you know that you're not stuck because you're terrible. You know, you're stuck because you've gone in a slightly wrong direction and it's fixable. And I think that that's something that we learn with experience.
I mean, I'm fortunate in that I have friends who write just critically acclaimed, beautiful prose and are convinced that it shit the whole time. Mm-hmm. I could not write unless I had a basic faith that what I could write would turn out well.
Yeah.
You know, I have anxiety. If I doubted that, then the game's over.
Right.
I couldn't continue to write unless, because it would feel like this draft, because it was so freaking long, took me so long to write. And if I didn't have any faith that what was there would be decent, then there's just no way.
Kind of stuck in that misery. Because the writing for me is almost always positive. Like publishing is not mm-hmm. always positive. It's very stressful. A lot of it is out of our control. The universe is terrible right now. Everything is burning.
Right.
But like the one place that I go that I feel positively pretty much 100% of the time is writing. Even when it's going badly. And I think occasionally, you know, I have those flutters of like, well, maybe I am terrible and this is the end of this.
Right.
But like I don't ever sit in that very long. And I mean, there's a privilege to that. Cause I know there are people that are just like slug and everything is awful and they still do it, which is like, man, good guts to you, man. Like that's tough. If that's the way your brain works when you're writing.
Right. No, I'm with you on that. I mean, a bad writing day is, I'm usually pretty cranky, but the good writing days are just, I feel so good at the end of a good
writing
day.
There's nothing, almost nothing better than that feeling. Almost nothing better than that feeling.
It's the same thing, you know, that first scene I wrote, it just wipes my brain clean, mm-hmm. you know? Yeah. And then you have something that you created from your head that like you can look back at, and it's a lot of times I barely remember if at all writing some of it, mm-hmm. you know, where I don't know where it came from.
It's almost like a fugue state. You're like, oh, mm-hmm. I wrote, because do you ever do the thing where you're writing along and you're doing your thing and you look up and it's been like 4 hours and that's why your back hurts and you've written like 26 pages or whatever, however many, if you count by words, and you're like, oh shoot. Because I almost get like lost in it.
Yeah. I mean, those are the best days.
Oh, they're the best days. Golden days.
Not all days are like that.
No. But when they are, so many are not like that.
But when they are, it is just, it's glory. It's wonderful. It's
like it's a high.
Basically, that's what I was going to say. I think that probably I'm glad I'm not prone to trying drugs, because I have a feeling that that is probably very similar to that.
Yeah, because when I have it, I do sometimes feel like I'm chasing that sometimes. Like,
yeah.
Especially if I haven't had one in a few, like in a book. Like, you know, some books are just kind of like that. Like, they write, I don't know why, because they just flow. If I've had a couple books in a row that have been struggle, like we call them struggle snuggles, like struggle snuggle books, like,
yes.
Like then I reach like that other thing, then it's like, oh, I need a golden day.
Yeah. Yeah. Where you just forget everything else and you emerge sometime later and it's magical. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm glad we're not the only one that feels that way. Yes. I mean, seriously, there's so many people that, I mean, that's the thing, right? We don't really, sometimes feel like we don't talk about differing mechanics when we talk about writing. Like so often people come and they say, this is how you do it. And what they really mean is, this is how I do it. And if you can take something from that, awesome. And if you can't, then that's okay, because that just may not be the way that you do it.
Right. I mean, there's sometimes I see people's schedules. I'm like, that sounds very healthy.
Yeah.
But it does not sound like, I mean, I am very much a feast or famine. Like if I'm, I am, and this is something I've discussed in the past with in therapy, but like, I tend to be like all or nothing. I tend to either be like, I'm working on it like incredibly hard, or like, I will take a lot of time off between books if I can. You know,
are you just like refilling the well in those times off? Like you just feel like you're just like kind of refilling that creative sense.
Yeah. I mean, I at this point, I mean, I've got to do revisions and things like that, but having just finished the never ending draft yesterday, like it's going to be a while.
Yeah.
Do you know how long this draft is, Jess?
Oh God, I'm scared.
Let me tell you how long this draft is. So I want to be clear that when I've written full length books in the past, I've never had big issues with word count. Like it's always been within a certain acceptable stretch. And my editor said I could be up to about 100,000 words, which was what Spoiler Alert was. And that was my longest contemporary romance at that point. My draft is 133,000 words.
Oh, wow.
I'm going to have to cut.
Like a quarter of the book.
A third of the book.
Oh my gosh.
A quarter to a third of the book. At some point, but that's a problem for future Olivia.
Right, future Olivia will deal with that. She'll cross that bridge when she comes to it.
You know,
Olivia's just like, "Woo, I'm done. I'm the best."
Or maybe, yes, exactly. Or maybe they will just. I don't know if you've ever
stretch.
I don't know. What's it? Is it Mariana Zapata who writes like super long books?
Maybe.
And I know Kristen Ashley does, so maybe I'll just Kristen Ashley this shit.
So what you do is, I mean, maybe they won't listen to this podcast. Shh, don't listen. If you're listening right now, editor, go away. Like they just won't hear it, and you'll just pretend like you didn't know it was. Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you said 150. Look, I'm under. And then just let the chips fall where they may. Who knows?
I mean, my plan is I'm running by my betas, my usual people. And I would say, my people I trust. And I say, if it's lagging somewhere, you know, flag it.
Yeah.
If you don't feel like it's lagging, then just leave it. And then it's up to my editor. Like at that point, leave it up to her. I think part of this is not what we were supposed to be talking about, but whatever, I'm in the middle now. is that this book is, in spoiler alert, the hero is his best friend is Marcus and is Alex. Mm-hmm. And Alex is like a delightful asshole.
Yeah.
And super chatty and just very funny. And he, the beginning of his relationship with a woman who's basically hired as his minder on a television production is happening in the background of Spoiler Alert.
Yeah.
So the stuff that was in the background, I had to include in this story.
Right.
and then expanded from there. And I think that what I did was, screw myself over because I think there were things I could not just take out because they were,
it was too interlocked.
Yeah.
And so, that's kind of cool when you do that, like, here's a subsequent thing, because I've done that in a couple of books, and it's really fun, because then you're, like, you're copying and pasting in what happened, and now you're, like, how do I change it? Whose point of view is it in? What does that mean? What's the inflection that somebody else might not be hearing? Like, right. All of that is really fun, and I feel like it's a really fun exercise, but also then you are locked in, and especially, like you said, if you didn't, I mean, I don't know if you would always plan to have him have a book, but if you didn't always plan, then you're just writing him as a fun secondary character, and now, oh, shit. He's a hero. Well, crap. Now I have to rethink everything in my life.
Originally, he was meant to be potentially a tertiary book that my editor did not know about.
Yeah.
That I had not proposed yet. But he, the secondary couple that I officially got my contract for, this is set on like a fictional TV show, sort of a sweeping fictional TV show, Game of Thrones-esque, called Gods of the Gates. And the couple that was supposed to be my second couple was supposed to be basically spend most of the show marooned on an island together, like shipwrecked by Neptune. It's based on Roman mythology, on an island together, which meant that they wouldn't have a ton of contact with the rest of the cast.
Right. You're kind of safe. Like, they fit into the world, but you don't have to deal with them in any other way.
Right. But it meant that they were not really in the story. So in the meantime, Alex, the best friend, kind of stole a chunk of the story. And then I was like, damn, I really want to write his book. Mm-hmm. And in fact, it was, and my editor, she'd actually forgotten it was supposed to be the other couple. She's like, well, of course, Alex is next. And I'm like, I have to tell you, that's not the contract.
You're enabling me. Thank you. Thanks for enabling me.
Right. But I mean, you know, I'm sure, I know that you've probably had this happen a bunch where there's a secondary character that just steals it, you know?
Yeah. And I think there's something to be said. And I mean, so you published, and I mean, I think this kind of ties into kind of your publishing journey, because I know you have independently published. I'm right about that, right?
Yes.
You've done indie and you've done traditional. And I think that when you've done indie, like in some ways, like, because I did traditional for a long time and then I'm now fully indie. And there's something about, like, you get this elbow room of, like, opening up in your list, like, I could do anything! Like, because you don't have, like, the box and the boundaries kind of go away. And then if I went back into traditional, which I know you've kind of, you have the new books that are coming out that are traditional, right? Including Spoiler Alert is traditionally published, right? And this other book, right? I mean, like, now it's like, well, okay, I now I have to, like, kind of fit, like, the 133,000 words. Who would have cared if you were indie, like, whatever. Or, like, switching who the character is. Like, you have so much more, I don't want to say freedom, because that sounds like the other thing is bad. But, like, you can be more loosey-goosey in a way. And then, I don't know. Well, I don't know if I could undo goosey-goosey.
Right. It's no longer strictly your decision. I mean, which I think there is a great freedom in the self-publishing, which I actually have really enjoyed.
Yeah.
You know, I just did it for the first time last year, but I've self-published now 5 stories and I really enjoyed it. And I credit them in part for actually getting the contract with Avon, because I think Teach Me, which was totally not something that I think a traditional publisher would get anywhere near, was well received. I mean, it didn't sell like a ton of copies, but it was well received and got me some attention. And I think I know that probably helped when it came to shopping what became Spoiler Alert. But you're right. I mean, there are some things that have been really, really lovely though. I mean, Avon, you know, has been super supportive of this book, and my editor is Elkek, and she's amazing. So I mean, so far it's been the best of both worlds. Then again, I haven't gotten my edit letter on the 133,000.
Stay tuned. All of this could change.
But you know, you were totally right. It hadn't even occurred to me. If this were self-publishing, I could just be like,
whatever.
Here you go.
It's 133,000 words. I mean, like, obviously, I mean, that kind of dismisses all of the work that goes into the, I mean, of course you would still go through the process of, hey, this is a lot longer than I had expected. Here you go, beta readers and an editor that you've hired. Like, let me know if it lags. You know, you might still cut words out of it because it lagged, but it would all be like an editorial choice and not like a, we need a 100,000 word book because that's how much it costs to print that.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, well, there's a printing cost and do we want to increase that printing cost? I mean, there's a different math problem that we do as indies than we do when we're traditionally published. Like, you get to have a different math conversation and that allows you so much more freedom. And then obviously there's advantages to doing the trad because you get that, you know, publisher support if you're lucky enough to actually get it. And then that, you know, that is a different, you know, you get just a different kind of distribution. There's all kinds of advantages to both, but one of the advantages to indie is you can go, no, I think this is 133,000 words.
Right. Right.
Everybody have fun.
I mean, we'll see. This is all in progress. We'll see how this plays out for me.
You'll have to come back. Part two. How did it go? How did that go?
Oh, no. I mean, it was like the finish line kept receding into the distance because I'm used to a certain length of book taking basically a certain length of time. And like, this was so far beyond that, that it was like, it was the effort I would normally put into a full length book plus the effort I would put into a lengthy novella.
Yeah.
All smushed into one piece. And like, I was just, I think I really like the book, but toward the end, I was just like, this just needs to be done.
Yeah. When you get, like, I was supposed to write a novella for a collection last year with a friend. And, you know, we were like, okay, so it's going to be 30 to 40,000 words, which usually it's fine. Like, I'm actually kind of a short writer. And so I'm like, I'm going to do awesome. And then it was like 48,000 words. And at like 42, I was like, oh my God, I need to stop. So by the end, I actually wrote the fucking end and took a picture of it for her. Right. I was like, I'm so sorry, I'm so far over. And of course it was indie and it didn't matter. But I mean, it was just like the best laid intentions. I was like, this is not a novella. This is a short novel. And
This happened.
Sorry. But yeah, I mean, it's, I don't know. It's a kind of a, but it does seem like though, that Avon has really embraced your brand that you developed with something like 40 Love, which has, I love that cover. I mean, the cover is amazing. And it feels like when I look at Spoiler Alert, that they're kind of carrying on that same style for you. Was that something that you discussed with them or something that they kind of just embraced on their own, or how did that kind of come about? Because you don't sometimes see that with, like, you know, going from an indie to a traditional transition, you know, or the traditional publishers don't always look and say, ooh, that looks like it works, and then work with it.
I think it actually kind of flowed the other way, I would say. Now, my first three self-published books last year were illustrated. Two of them I've kept the covers, one I've switched the Teach Me cover. But they were not the illustrator that I've used for 40 Love. And it's the same illustrator for Spoiler Alert. Her name is Lenny Kaufman, and she's amazing. She's living in London right now, and she's incredible. What happened was, and this was before I had self-published any of the books that I self-published this year, including 40 Love, is that Avon asked me if I had any particular illustrators in mind. And they were looking for people who would have perhaps a slightly different style from what, because, you know, there's a lot of illustrated covers on the market right now.
Yeah, it's very, very so they, on point.
They wanted something. Yeah, so they wanted something that might stand out. So I started doing research, because if they're going to ask me for my opinion,
you better have one.
Well, and I'm a bit of a control freak. So I'm like, well, if I have input, I'm going to give some input. You know, if you're offering that to me, I'm going to do it. So I started researching, and, you know, I looked at various ideas, but it became clear after all the research that the illustrator I love most by far was Lenny Kaufman. She had done the cover for Mimi Grace's Along for the Ride. And that's the reason I originally looked her up, because I thought that that was so well done and unusual and looked different from any of the other illustrated covers out there. So then I looked at Lenny's website, and it was just great. And she does such diverse people on the covers, you know, racially, but also body shape. So I was like, when the body shape thing, I saw that a couple of the women there had, you know, had a big ass. And I was like, okay,
ooh,
that, because, you know, some illustrators, everything that they do are these like super slim, elongated people.
Yeah.
Like that's just what they do. And that is not my characters. And sometimes people would have trouble then if there's no examples of them doing any different sort of body shapes, then
you have no idea if they can do it, if they can even right. do it.
Or whether they can. The thing about Lenny that's magical is that whatever you give her, she will make it beautiful because she assumes that it can be beautiful.
Yeah.
And there are people who will look at larger people and say, well, I don't know how to make that pretty, mm-hmm. you know? And yeah. So mm-hmm. I knew that Lenny could do that, you know? So I saw it. She does great work. So I told Avon I would like her. And bless them, they did it. They said, okay. And they got her. So then they showed me the cover for Spoiler Alert. And I cried a little bit.
Yeah. It's also gorgeous.
It's gorgeous. And she is like unabashedly like, because one of my strictures for the cover is like, sometimes the publishers say that the woman inside is fat or plus size or whatever term they use. And the cover is like, maybe on the verge mm-hmm. of, but like, I was like, no, I want her to be unmistakably fat.
Yeah.
Like that this is not something where you can say, well, maybe she shops at the lower end of plus sizes, whatever. It's yeah. like, no, I want her to be big and to be beautiful. And she has an ass and she's got arms and like, I just love her. She's just gorgeous and it's a beautiful cover artistically, but also she's just, you know, there's no mistaking that she's fat and she's gorgeous. And that was precisely what I wanted. So I saw that. And then I was like, I talked to Zoe York, right? Who is like my guru for self-publishing. if she tells me to do something, I generally do it. One of her suggestions was that I, whatever series I had that was the most similar in tone to what I was publishing with Avon, my self-published series books that were most similar to Spoiler Alert, I should rebrand them to make them look more similar.
Yeah, which is smart.
Which is smart, and I would never have thought of it, right?
Yeah, right.
So I was like, and I've got two more books coming out in the series, which is the closest series, the Marysburg series, to Spoiler Alert. And I was like, I would die to have Lenny do those covers too. So I was like, okay. So I went to Lenny before the Spoiler Alert cover was out, and I said, are you willing to recover, put a new cover for Teach Me, which was the first book, and then make covers for the second and third books that are coming out this summer? And she said, you know, bless her, she said yes. And so, and I asked Avon's permission. They said, as long as it looks, you know, different enough. And, you know, the Avon books don't, they have a background, but the background is like a line drawing. Mm-hmm. It's not like, you know, full on, full fledged.
A full background. Scene, yeah.
And so I tried to make it different enough that it wasn't stepping on any toes, but Avon said, good, go for it. And so then I used her for my self-published stuff too. And it's been wonderful. I'll be blunt. It was an investment.
Yeah.
But I wasn't going to any conferences this year. I wasn't traveling.
Yeah, I'm finding a lot more money for other things now that I can't go do like a custom photo shoot in LA. So I'm like, fine, if I can't have a custom photo shoot, I get to take all the StrengthsFinder tests and classes that I want.
So yeah. I want to hear about a custom photo shoot. I know nothing about those. Mm. So yeah, please tell me about custom photo shoots.
Well, I mean, I go out to LA and I do a shoot with Jen LeBlanc, Studio Sexy. And the really nice thing is that you kind of get that same, you know, what you're talking about, which is something that we don't see. I don't think we see in romance enough. I think we're starting to see more is the fat representation as a curvier girl. I really appreciate seeing a body that is beautiful, that looks more like my own body. But you know, I mean, you know, because you've looked, right? I mean, like you try to find a image that is stock that looks like what you want it to look like. And to be fair, I mean, I write very cis, very het, very like it's historical romance and it's mostly just kind of what you would expect out of historical romance. So I don't have this problem of like, it doesn't look like I want it to look, but when I do want it to look specifically, it's so nice to be able to just like, I talk to Jen, I talk to Shelley, our producer, we pick out, we talk about what I want. They find models. I get to look at pictures. I get to pick which models I want. I get to go to the studio. I get to see the way that they interact with each other. I get to see the energy that they have, which really changes sometimes my whole creative process. But what you get out of that is like something that looks exactly like you want it to look. And so when you're doing a, you know, an image shoot versus like a illustrated shoot, like you still get that like really specific look and feel. And no one else ever has my cover because it's the two models that I picked that are, you know, rubbing up against each other on a settee. So that's a good thing.
Settees are the best.
Oh my God. Settees are the best. Especially for historical, but I mean, it is nice. I mean, the book that I have that's coming out the week before this will air, the model is, the character is curvy and the model was too. And so it was nice to like, to be able to put that onto a cover and again, like have her be beautiful in the way that I wanted her to be beautiful because I wanted her to be beautiful, you know?
Right.
And it's the same thing. I mean, if you find someone that can create that, and that's really great, you know, to be able to create what you want to see that you've created inside the pages of a book, to be able to see that actually on the cover is like something really special, I think.
It is, you know, it is, particularly if you have, I mean, it is no matter what, but you're right. I mean, the illustrated covers that she's made for me, I've said before, are the illustrated version of a custom photo shoot.
Mm-hmm.
And it's wonderful. I would love at some point to like, I may DM you to be like, tell me more.
No, you should. I will totally hook you up. We can talk about that later, but yes. Yeah, totally right. Do. Because I mean, I really love that. The whole part of that has really changed my creative process and it's really fun to, and I'm sure that working with her to get the illustration to be the way that you want it to be is somewhat similar, where you start thinking about them in a different way, like the way that they move together, the way that they would stand together, the way that, like, I mean, there's just something really interesting about that. And I think I've learned that I'm kind of a visual creator more than I thought I was, because I always went along just like kind of like, okay, this one's Hugh Jackman again, you know, or whatever. I wouldn't pick Hugh Jackman today, but like whatever, you know, this one is Tom Hardy. Like a lot of them are Tom Hardy. And now they're not Tom Hardy anymore. They're the guy that I actually saw moving around. And that is right. That is a very different switch of the brain. But mm-hmm. You know, I know that there was a lot of controversy kind of semi-recently, and I've talked to other people about this too, with someone had written, you know, the article with illustrated covers and they're whatever ruining, something's always ruining romance for somebody. But I mean, I thought it was such an interesting conversation because of exactly this, that like, if you are writing a character who is plus size, it is harder to find the art that you want to use if you're not doing something custom, which is expensive. So, right. I mean, like, and expand that into some, you know, characters of different non-white races, characters of, yeah, I mean, like.
Disabled, like, non-white.
Yep, disabled.
Male, female.
Yeah, LGBTQ of really any variety. Like, it's very difficult to find. Like, you look up, you know, romantic whatever, and for a stock image, and you get, you know, some guy with glasses holding a pen and you're like, why? How is that the thing that I was looking for? But I mean, so having that option of doing illustrated, especially since your illustrated covers especially are exceptionally beautiful, that, and they're so evocative. Like I teared up when I saw 40 Love because I was just like, oh, wow, that makes me, like, it made me feel good to look at that. And right. So having that as an option, I thought that the argument was dumb, basically, is what I'm saying. It was a dumb argument. Just because, I mean, I think, and especially, again, because yours, and I think, I guess the argument sort of was, like, if you see an illustrated cover, you think you're getting a rom-com, and if you open up the book and it's not a rom-com, then that's a problem. And it's like, well, yeah, that's the problem, though, not the illustrated cover. It's that it's right. Covering something that doesn't fit the look that you've given it. That's right. A different conversation than illustrated covers are ruining romance.
Right. I had so many thoughts about that article, which I expressed in DMs mm-hmm. people. I mean, I will go down my entire list of
the rabbit hole.
Exactly. But one thing I would say is that if you look back at my covers for my first series, which was an EPUB series through Kensington, Lovestruck Librarians had, you know, photo covers. And I defy you to look at most of those covers and tell me what the content is.
Right.
Like, I defy you to look at the cover of Ready to Fall, which had a headless woman and man on, well, I mean, they had heads, but the head had been cut off.
Right, they had heads originally.
They weren't actually decapitated. You just couldn't see the head. That's a whole other,
they pushed him down the stairs.
Exactly. Fucking men, halfway through the novella, no head. But it's pictures of them on bikes with, like, flowers in her basket.
Yeah, you have no clue.
And then some of my reviews were mad because I swear a lot and there's graphic sex.
Right.
So I'm just saying that I think the complaint that somehow, I mean, unless it's like man titties on the front, which does usually imply graphic sex, otherwise I don't find them any more of a good guide to the content inside.
Exactly.
Than an illustrated cover. And yes, at one point illustrated covers, you know, denoted content that did not usually have graphic sex or things like that, but things change. And I will also say I've been reading romance since the early 1980s. You know, I'm 43 and I started reading when I was like 6 or 7, right? And we have gone through periods in the past where the covers, like, there's covers of Amanda, Jane Ann Krenz's and Amanda Quick's from the 80s or early 90s, where there's just a flower on the cover.
Yes, there was a flower phase.
I mean, I think that sometimes these sort of hot takes are, well, first of all, they're cold. But, yes. But I also think they're written without a lot of knowledge of the actual history of romance. Exactly. And of romance covers. And so there's not a lot of perspective on saying that this is somehow, I mean, it is simply, like, I love these covers, the illustrated covers. Like, I genuinely just love them. But the trend toward illustrated covers in general is marketing.
Yes.
It is a trend that's going to come and it's going to go and mm-hmm. something else is going to take its place. And all it means is that they're just trying to sell more books. And it, you know, I there can be larger connotations than that. Obviously, you don't want to somehow imply that, you know, sex is dirty or sex should not be on the front. But I just think, you know, it just goes through phases.
Thinking through it that well. You know what I mean? Like, you and I are having a deeper conversation about it. I'm not sure that the publishers are necessarily having a deeper conversation about it. You know, I mean, I'm not sure that they're saying, well, we don't want to depict sex, so let's put an illustrated cover on it. They're just going, this book that had an illustrated cover sold 10,000 copies, and this book with a not illustrated cover sold 8,000 copies, so illustrated covers are good now. And let's put them on this because it seems like maybe it sells stuff and that's what people are excited about right now. And I'm not sure, because again, I mean, what you're saying is really true. I mean, when I started at Avon in 2005, my first book that came out, it had the same kind of cover that they were putting on Julia Quinn's book or Lisa Kleypas's book or, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, the step backs for them because I was fancy and I wasn't, but, you know, or the 10 people that they bought in the Avon debut program that year. And my books were super, super sexy. And there were people that didn't have any sex at all. And all of us had the same kind of cover. Like, you couldn't, like, you could have taken, you know, a cover of mine next to a cover of somebody else who was writing something far less sexy. In fact, was going around on the internet saying sexy books are really dirty and they shouldn't, you know, it's just gross that they're buying so many sexy books. And I'm like, hi, we've met and we sat next to each other at dinner. And that's really awkward that you're saying that. But like, we had the same cover, this author and I, not the same cover, but the very, like, you, if you put them next to each other and took our names off them, I don't know that you would have known this is a Jenna Peterson book at the time. And this is a author X book. Because that's what they were selling as, this is what historical romance from Avon looks like. And it's the same now. I mean, all those covers with historical romance with Avon, they look like historical romance from Avon covers. They don't look like what's necessarily in the inside.
Right.
It is what it is, you know? And again, I mean, and then I think that the translation of that becomes the author is doing something wrong. And when you're talking about traditional published books, we don't have any say in that at all. Like, I don't have any say in what they do. Like, I can ask them for something. And like you said, like, sometimes they're very receptive, and that's awesome when they are. I mean, it's cool when you get to have that input, but like, that is one of the things you give up, is like, if they've decided that, that your books need, if they decided to come to you and say, we're not going to put illustrated covers on those books anymore, we're going to put photos. I mean, for you, you might be like, no, but this is the thing that I do now. But they're going to say, this is what we've decided. And you don't really have any.
Right.
You don't have, you know, you can make a complaint, but it may or may not be heard.
Right. So, right.
You know, the concept that somehow we're trying to like pull a fast one with our covers is just so ridiculous, because it's like, half the time, dude, we don't even have any control over that. So.
Right.
What do you want me to do?
And there is just a, I mean, well, I won't even.
Yeah, I know. It could be a 4-hour conversation.
About just that incident. Like, I wrote and deleted so many draft tweets that night. I finally just made my, I went ahead and subtweeted by retweeting other people.
Yeah. Because at some point you're like, my brain hurts and I'm just mad. It's pulsing. Right. I have a pulsing anger.
Right. So, I mean, I will say that my covers, I do have relatively graphic sex inside, but I think my covers capture my books and like the feel of my books, I think, remarkably well, even apart from just them really being beautiful. You know, that's not me, that's Lenny. Like, she just did an amazing job. Like, I could not be prouder of those covers. And like, I had, you know, we were just talking about on Twitter last night and today, you know, Emily Hemingway cosplayed that cover.
The yes, 4 I saw that. Cover.
And I cried.
Oh, because, it's such a great, yes.
And I've never had anyone cosplay any of my covers before, or even want to. And I think that was sort of a testament to, you know, you have a larger woman on the front and she's beautiful, mm-hmm. you know, and not dressed in fancy clothes, like dressed in an accessible way,
yeah.
and still beautiful. And it really, like, I cried when I saw that. I cried the entire months of the night because it was exactly what I had wanted. Like, when I was growing up, I would have killed for that.
Yeah.
Like, I wanted so badly to see someone who looked like me on a cover.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it was very few and far between, and it usually was not well done sometimes if they did do it. And
well, and then inside the whole story is about how, I mean, that she's just going to lose the weight and then she'll be happy, or, you know, all of the drama about it is about her weight and how she's eating and if she's losing weight and trying to, and I mean, like, it's nice when a story isn't about that. Like, it's just like, we just get to also live our lives.
Right. Yes. Not every minute of my life is revolving around food or fatness.
What I am or am not eating, or what I am and am not working out, and whether I am or am not on the scale. Like, my life does not actually function in that way.
Right. So, yeah, I mean, I certainly think that there is an argument to be made, and I would help make that argument, that stock photos there needs to be stock photos that are much more diverse.
Yes.
As far as bodies and as far as race and as far as all those sort of axes of marginalization we just talked about. I certainly think that's something that needs to be done. But in the meantime, while that has not been done and not everyone can get a custom photo shoot, either through a publisher or funding one themselves, then you can have adorable covers that are illustrated that actually represent the characters that are on the page. And that is, to me, an unabashed good thing.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah. So that's as kindly as I can put it.
That was very kind.
My DMs were not as kind.
that's why they're DMs.
Yes.
Yeah. So, well, I mean, sometimes though we need to, you know, I mean, it's you write some DMs and then you're like, okay, I'm going to not put this out.
Yes.
I'm going to go ahead and keep that anger to myself. It's just fine. And there's something to be said though about like, it's hard to walk a line of when do you lose your shit and when do you not, you know, like when is it a thing that you fight about and when is it not? And I think in that case, there were so many people fighting that fight that maybe it was one of those things where you could be like, yeah, I'm just going to retweet.
Right.
And then, exactly. I mean, it's a kind of a battle of like, is this a place I want to wade into today? Do I have the spoons? Do I have the time? Do I have the energy? Is this something that I need to like drag into? And like, when do I talk about my depression? When do I talk about my anxiety? That always feels like it's kind of a something that I'm navigating. Like if I'm mad about something, like, is it my place to say something about it? Is it my obligation to say something about it out of my privilege? Is it something that I'm just going to get myself worked up about and I'm not going to actually have any impact? Do you feel like that's kind of an argument that you end up having in your head in those kinds of circumstances?
I do. And in most cases, I come down on the side of just retweeting because, yes. In most cases, I am maybe along one or two axes of marginalization that are often part of this, but I am not alone. There are people who are along more, and I would rather have them speak and try to
amplify those voices
instead of adding my own. Because when it comes down to it, like I'm a, financially comfortable cis, mostly het white lady. Mm-hmm. And like on most topics, like, who the fuck wants to hear what I have to say? I don't have anything to say that would be as useful or
as am I adding to the conversation?
Right. And I'm not as grounded in real experience as other people. So I'd rather amplify their voices. So, So, and also I do have anxiety. So like, if I'm going to wade into something that's going to get, is going to get heated, then I have to really be sure that I can speak to it in a way that is not going to, that I can feel very confident about, that I know what I'm talking about, and that I can phrase it in a way that is how I intend it.
Yeah.
And some days I don't have that, particularly since some of these things blow up, like, and it's like 3 a.m. here in Sweden.
Yeah.
I don't have enough brain cells left at 3 a.m. to.
I can't have this argument.
Yes. I mean, I just so don't have late. It to make sure that whatever I tweet would be, that I feel like really, that I think it is exactly what I want to say. And that's, then I just retweet.
Yeah.
Like you said. So.
It's always a good option.
But again, there are some times where you just got to say it,
Yeah. There are times when it's worth wading into the minefield and just knowing that it's going to go off and it's okay. And that it will be like,
if it's about fat rep, like I feel like pretty good about knowing what I'm talking about with
right.
that. So I'm much more likely to wade into that instead of necessarily only retweeting others, but other stuff. Yeah.
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 Well, shockingly, we're out of time. I don't know how that happened because I just felt like this hour just flew by. did we even talk about anything? I don't know. But I wanted to know if you wanted to tell everybody what your latest book is, what your next book is, both of those things, whatever you want them to go order so they can go do that.
Okay. So we talked mostly. It's not the last thing I put out, but I put out several books this summer. But the one that we talked about, I think is a good exemplar of what I've been writing recently, which is 40 Love, which has, again, a gorgeous cover. Again, that's not complimenting myself. That's complimenting Lenny, who did it. And that is the story of a woman who's turning 40, was on a vacation for her 40th birthday, and has a wardrobe malfunction with her bikini top. And she's fat, as are pretty much all my heroines, female main characters these days. And she has a wardrobe malfunction and is rescued by this random Swedish dude in the water nearby, who is 26. and then it turns out he is the tennis pro for the resort. And as she finds out later, he was a former top-level tennis pro who just had to retire at the age of, 25 with injuries. Like his career was done at the age of 25. So it's a story of she knows what she wants for her future professionally. He's recalibrating everything that he thought his future would hold because this is all he's done. So essentially he's going through a midlife crisis at 26 years old.
Aww.
Because these people, they start young.
Yeah.
And then that is what their life is about. You know, the people they know, what they do on a daily basis, all of it revolves around that sport. And then suddenly it's gone.
Yeah.
And so how do you define yourself? I mean, what do you actually know about what you can do other than that sport? Mm-hmm. So he's sort of at that crossroads, and she's, you know, has a future that does not necessarily involve a 26-year-old, like, dude who doesn't know what he wants to do with his life. She's 40 and wants to be principal. Anyway, but it's bantery. It's some of my best banter, and it's sexy. And I think it's heartfelt, and I think it's a fun book, and that's 40 Love. And then coming out in October 6th. When is your book coming out in October?
The 18th, I think.
Okay. 18th. So
yeah, so pretty close together.
Pretty close together. Is spoiler alert, which is my first, it's my debut in print. So, I mean, I have print books for my self-published, but my debut as far as trade paperback and as far as through a publisher. Mm-hmm. And that is set on a, like I said, a fictional Game of Thrones type show. And it's one of the actors on that show who is very dismayed at how the final season and so has been getting out his frustration with that through writing fix it fan fiction about his own show anonymously. And he has a very good friend who again anonymously on this server that they do all this with, this fandom, and so they kind of like each other, but again he's openly criticizing the show, so this is not something that...
Yeah, it can't come out.
He can't come out about that. So he can't meet her, except then he, after a Twitter exchange, he actually ends up on a date with a fan, and her name is April. And then he finds out somewhat during the dinner that she writes fan fiction, and lo and behold, because this is a romance, she's his best friend.
I'm like pre-ordering this right now.
she's his best friend online, but he can't really tell her. So,
oh my God, I'm so happy about this right now.
So then, you know, and then it plays out from there. But I mean, he's not what he seems, because he has sort of a himbo sort of reputation, but that's deliberately been cultivated by him. For various reasons, and she has been hiding her role in the fandom, because in her line of work, she's a geologist. Her previous job, people would sort of look at her as like a silly fangirl if she came out about it. Right. But now she's switching jobs, is determined to, like, basically come out into the open as everything that she is, which is a fangirl and a fat woman and a smart woman and a a confident woman who still has some vulnerabilities. And it's a lot about families and about setting boundaries. And I think it's sexy and I think it's funny. And it has, which you'll see if you read the reviews, in between each chapter, there are little interstitials, which are snippets from fanfic that they've written.
Oh, or so cute.
Or snippets from, like, his terrible movie scripts that he's done. Anyway, so that's, and that's coming out October 6th, and I'm really proud of it. It's by far the most ambitious book I've written.
Yeah, there's a lot of layers there.
So, yeah, so I'm proud of it, and I hope people love it. And the cover, that's, again, Lenny Kaufman who did the cover, and it's just, it's beautiful.
It is, it's really, really beautiful.
Yeah. Well, tell me, can I hear about your book? Tell me about the premise of your book coming out in October.
Mine is the fourth in a series called The Dukes by Blows. And it is, do you remember on Twitter, right when quarantine started, there was they were doing different plays like through Zoom. And one of them was Oscar Isaac with a salt and pepper beard. And
it was the part with the slip,
with the spanking. And I was like, So it's that.
I remember, Jess.
Oh. It was so sexy. And like, they were just so flirty. Anyway, so I had set up in the third book of the series that's coming out in August, her friend had sort of disappeared and she didn't know where she was. And she's searching for her because she's gotten herself into some trouble. And it turns out she's staggered into the carriage of this Oscar Isaac with a salt and pepper beard who likes to spank you hero, and he's sort of helping her to protect her and to help her overcome this like terrible, she's seen a murder, so she's trying to escape, right? Like, and trying to figure out how she can get out of this, you know, bad situation she's gotten herself into, and he's helpful in doing that and other things. So that's my book. It's coming out in October.
Wasn't that Marissa? Was it Marissa Tomei?
It was Marissa Tomei.
I remember that. I mean, at this point, it seems like that was like 10,
oh, it was like 10, a thousand years ago, right?
But that has stuck in my memory. Yes.
Yeah. Well, and I was like, am I into that? I think I am. So, I mean, you know how it is. Sometimes you just grab that, like you get that. Like that, something just hits you in your gut and you're like, well, that's what I'm writing. So that's what I wrote. But it was fun to have them sort of, because I liked that she was like laughing and smiling and he was very like lowbrow, and like, so he never smiles in the book. He only smiles for her a couple times. He's very like, oh, he's Oscar Isaac with his salt and pepper beard who wants to smack you on the ass. So it's great. It's a good day. It wasn't a bad book to write. That's for sure.
I want this book, Jess.
Okay. Well, I'll send you the information when it goes up for pre-order. We'll trade, because I've already pre-ordered yours now. So. I'll be like, remember that book we were talking about on the podcast? Yeah. No. Well, thank you again for coming and staying up late in Sweden and doing this with me.
Well, it was my pleasure, and I'm sorry if I was rambly.
No, you were great.
I really enjoyed it.
This has been Journeys of Romance. I'm Jess Michaels, your host. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you again next time.